Good morning. Thank you again, President Stevens and Speaker Tilton, for the invitation to speak here again today. It's great to be in Alaska. I'd like to recognize my two youngest children who are with me today in the Taylor Gallery. Job is a senior at Yakutsk here in Juneau, and Nora is in 10th grade at JDHS. Along with their five older siblings, I have been very inspired by all seven of my kids, especially after the shocking loss of the head of our household, the head of our family, Gene Peltola Jr., who we knew as Buzzy. We miss him every day, and we strive to honor his memory. I also want to recognize my staff in the gallery. We've achieved some very big wins this year, which would not have happened without all of my staff. Anton, could you wave or cheers us? Yeah. Inti, Burke, Monica, Logan, Tyson, and all of you who aren't with us here today have helped all of us with the big transition last year, and thank you for your commitment to Alaska. Last year, I spoke about the Alaska model and how many people around the country and honestly around the world are paying attention to what's happening in this building and across our amazing state. What you all have accomplished and continue to accomplish is incredible. After all, you've managed to keep your Speaker of the House for two whole years. Believe me, it's harder than it looks. I think that the Alaska model works so well because it's built on relationships and friendships between some incredible figures in our state's history. Giants of our past, from Wally Hickel to Ted Stevens to Don Young, would never let partisanship or national media attention stand between them and the right decision for Alaska. Many of us know giants of our own. In our own family histories, the parents and grandparents who persevered through hardship, worked exciting and challenging jobs in booming industries. Whether they came from a long line of Alaskans or were just one of the many who moved here, fell in love, and never left. But many people seem to struggle to thrive in Alaska these days. For 11 straight years, more and more adults in the prime of their working years have left Alaska. From affordable housing to good-paying jobs to high energy prices, Alaskans are facing many hurdles. I want to thank this body for tackling one of the biggest hurdles Alaskans face when deciding whether or not they can raise their families in Alaska. Last week, and then again today, you will be showing that Alaskans are invested in our kids and their education. As a mother of seven and with two kids still attending school here in Juneau, I thank you. I hear from Alaskans every day who worry that the good times are behind us. They fear their future will be smaller than the ones that their parents and grandparents enjoyed. I'm here to tell all of them, we won't let this happen. Alaska has never been an easy place to live. For 12,000 years, Alaska Natives have struggled with natural disasters, food scarcity, and safety issues. And even today, when 85% of our communities are off the road system, we find ways to live our lives, care for our families, and live far better lives than people, at least in my opinion, do in DC and elsewhere in the lower 48. Alaska has faced and overcome challenges before. We're a young state, and there is still so much more we can accomplish if we're willing to work together, ignore the lower 48 partisanship, and cultivate a new generation of leadership. I know this because we all stood up to it just over the last year, and we've demonstrated this in the last year of working together. There's no better example of this than the news I have to share with you today. Alaska has convinced the Federal Trade Commission to sue to block the Kroger-Albertsons merger. After listening to Alaskans who were concerned about paying higher food prices and losing union jobs in their communities, I took the lead by sending the FTC a letter urging them to block the merger. 24 of you also sent a letter to the FTC asking for the same. Our U.S. senators raised deep concerns in a letter of their own. Then we all banded together to host unprecedented listening sessions so the FTC could hear the concerns of regular Alaskans. And today, the FTC informed me that it was those listening sessions, hearing from regular people like they have never heard before, that not only convinced them to move to stop this merger, but it also created a new model for how the FTC will engage with constituents when making big decisions that affect them and their lives, the Alaska model. Another great example of what we can accomplish when we all work together is the Willow Project. Last year, I spoke to you about how important this project is to our state and how we all needed to come together to make it happen. With a unanimous resolution, you all helped us show that Alaskans not only wanted this project, we needed this project. Luckily, I can stand before you all today and say, we got this project. As we speak, ice roads are being laid and construction is getting underway. The first of thousands of Alaska jobs are being created, with new wages rippling out into the broader community. I believe it was Senator Click Bishop who told me that recently he stepped into a hardware store in Fairbanks and the shelves were nearly cleared. All the inventory had been bought up for use on the North Slope. That is the kind of success that Alaskans can see and feel in our communities. And you all, together with the governor, labor groups, businesses, and Alaska Natives, formed one of the largest coalitions in Alaska's history. I just can't emphasize that enough. We formed that coalition to overcome the pressure of lower 48 interest groups who have no connections to Alaska. When I joined our senators to meet with President Biden, we emphasized our unity. And each of us spoke for a different part of that coalition. Let me be clear, Willow is not a step backwards in terms of climate goals. It is an essential step forward in our energy transition. Alaska is not an empty snow globe. People live here, and we have needs. I'm confident Alaska will have more unified winds like Willow in the near future. However, Willow is underway, and outside groups have pushed the Department of Interior to restrict development in almost all of the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska, which, as its name reflects, was set aside explicitly for oil development. They ignored precedent, they ignored the Inupiat of the North Slope, and made this decision without any actual tribal consultation. They rushed through this process to satiate lower 48 political pressure. I'm very encouraged to see Representative Baker's resolution opposing this rule, and I'll continue working to make sure the voices of the North Slope communities are being heard in DC. Whether or not you support more production on the North Slope, everyone in the room agrees that it should be Alaskans who make this choice. And because last year we agreed that this development is essential, I'm glad to report that I just learned that Santos is hiring more than 2,400 employees on the North Slope this season. Between Pika and Willow, we are bringing over 4,000 jobs to our state. Preserving our ability to fund public services through petroleum revenue is essential. Still, last year, I also spoke to you about the importance of using these energy projects and other federal investments as a springboard to a cleaner, less expensive energy future. We are witnessing the effects of a changing climate in real time, with Alaskan houses already sinking into the permafrost. For the sake of our future, we have to do something. We need to be creating a cleaner future for the next generation, not by rejecting fossil fuels entirely, but by investing in new technology that can power our homes and businesses with fewer emissions for a lower cost. Creating a cleaner electric grid doesn't just benefit the planet, it benefits everyone and every household in a very real way. Cheap power is the foundation of every economy. And Alaska has long had some of the most expensive power in the country. And I should say, Alaska has always had the most expensive power in the country, despite our tremendous oil and gas resources. We're an energy-rich state with wind, solar, tidal, and geothermal energy. We must take advantage of all energy options to ensure Alaskans have reliable and inexpensive power. These energy sources often don't pencil out for many reasons, but that doesn't have to be true anymore. We can make a choice to invest now in a 21st century energy grid, one that can fully unleash the energy potential of our state. There is no better way to start that than with the Alaska's Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships Program award, a federal award of $206.5 million to complete major upgrades to the Rail Belt electric grid, with another $206.5 million in matching funds required. I spoke with Secretary Granholm and President Biden personally about how much this means to our state. I work day in and day out with our U.S. senators to help bring this project home, and we will continue to deliver for Alaska. And if we can pull this off, 75% of Alaskans could be on 80% of renewable energy by 2040. I'll be direct. We must meet the required funding match. There is simply too much at stake to miss this opportunity. If, heaven forbid, Cook Inlet Gas can no longer heat homes on the Rail Belt or the next energy grid crisis occurs, we will kick ourselves for not having built a stronger grid that can share power more efficiently between regions and lower costs for everyone. As I often share with my colleagues in DC, Alaska is 100 years behind the rest of the country when it comes to basic infrastructure. We truly cannot afford to miss out on these once-in-a-generation funding opportunities. We must act today. This is also true when it comes to broadband internet. The modern age is an internet age, and Alaskans deserve to be part of it as much as anyone else. I'm incredibly proud to have helped bring over $2 billion in new broadband investments to Alaska. These projects will open up whole new regions of the state to high-speed internet access, and all the personal, health, educational, and economic benefits that come with it. Amen. It's no secret these projects are expensive, particularly when the communities involved are small. But delivering internet access is not a one-way relationship. Connecting Alaskans to each other and the rest of the world helps us tell our stories and be heard in a way that we never could before. Think of how many people around the world watch the videos of Patuck Glen showing the rich traditions of life on the North Slope. Even the smallest and most remote community has something to teach us, and they should be able to share their lives like the rest of America. But if we want people to move here and stay here, we also need to invest in the basic services that people expect from a state government. I'm deeply concerned by the number of Alaskans waiting for months to receive SNAP benefits and other nutritional assistance due to backlogs in the state's process. I'm working with the Department of Agriculture to support exemptions and extensions, but these are only temporary measures. These programs and departments need to be adequately funded, because if we can't deliver basic services to Alaskans, then why should people want to move here or raise their children here? Food security is something most of us in this room take for granted, but for many Alaskans, it's no longer a given. If these it's these Alaskans who suffer food insecurity, who need to be listening, we need to be listening to and finding effective ways to support. I'm grateful to hear of the programs being the programs and progress being made in this area, like the new USDA pilot program, Alaska Meals to You, that will fund the delivery of shelf-stable lunch foods across rural Alaska. Kids with empty stomachs can't learn, play, or grow. They fall behind in ways that can follow them for the rest of their lives. That brings me to another vital pillar of Alaskan food security, the fish that our communities rely on. We all know that fishing isn't just a key part of our state's economy, it's a shared cultural heritage and a very real food source for many of us. In some ways, it seems like the bad news just keeps coming. More low returns and subsistence restrictions, seafood plant closures in communities across Alaska. These are the stories that tear our hearts apart. I can't imagine raising children in Alaska where the rivers are empty. The decline of Alaskan fisheries is a trend years in the making, and it will take years of hard work to fully reverse. But I believe we are already starting to see positive signs. When I got to DC, people would laugh about my being pro-fish. I have made it clear that this is not a laughing matter, and people are finally starting to pay attention. Everyone in Alaska knows we don't joke about hunting or fishing or freedom. Now, a lot of people in Lower 48 know we don't joke about it either. I'm happy to say that because I founded the Bipartisan American Seafood Caucus, we are bringing representation from all four corners of America's coastlines together for the first time in our nation's history. There is more, okay. There's more encouraging news on the horizon. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is reviewing its national standards, the Ten Commandments of Fisheries Management, as I call them, for the first time in nearly a decade. Bristol Bay, the world's largest wild sockeye salmon fishery, has been protected for generations to come. But the highlight of last year has undoubtedly been one of the most pro-fish executive orders in our nation's history, cracking down on the foreign trawl fleets and fish processed inhumanely that are undermining our Alaskan fishermen and the health of our ocean species. The ocean is a shared ecosystem, and the damage that these foreign vessels do is felt in every coastal community around our state. After catching untold, unreported amounts of fish, Russian fleets utilize Uyghur slave laborers in China to process their catch, avoiding Western sanctions and bottoming out the price of seafood for every Alaskan vessel. This is a system that has been perfected over the past decade by Russians to take more and more of a shared resource, funding a two-year bloody war in Ukraine while pushing ever closer to our waters. This is what Alaskan fishing families are up against, and we've all had enough. I'm proud to have pushed this administration to finally take action against these lawless foreign fleets. What each of these victories has in common is that they were all a team effort, and each of us took the lead in different ways. While we may not have the same power that Alaska enjoyed in the heyday of Stevens and Young, I believe our congressional delegation today is following in the footsteps of Alaskan giants. I know that I can rely on our U.S. senators to back me up, and I know that there is far more than that we agree on than disagree. I will always admire my friend Lisa, who's been such a champion for Alaska, reliably bringing home funding for critical projects and being a vital deal maker over and over in a divided Congress. And I'll always appreciate Dan's tenacity and his passion, putting country before party to help push through vital military nominations and uphold America's commitments to our allies. Together, we passed a National Defense Authorization Act that included a 5.2% pay raise for our troops, the largest increase in decades, and made crucial investments in Alaska's military bases. (Clears throat) Alaska has gotten more out of the 118th Congress in per capita funding than almost any state. And that isn't an accident. Having a politically balanced delegation means we can talk to anyone from any angle. We can get a meeting with a Republican or a Democratic president. We can work with the majority and the minority. In a Congress as polarized as this one, that is a powerful advantage for a small state with only 3 members of Congress. Too much is riding on federal support to put all of our eggs in one political basket. And that's true for everyone here as well. Many of the giants of the past have left us, and it's up to us to carry on. While we will always stand on their shoulders, the next rung of the ladder is still a reach. We need new blood and new ideas to get there. That's why I'm proud to announce that this year I'll be convening a summit of Alaskans from all walks of life to focus on the issue of outmigration. We've been discussing this issue for years, but everyone has their ideas on what's causing it and how to fix it. We need a whole of society effort to identify the trends causing our children to leave and a shared understanding of what it will take for them to choose to stay. This summit will bring together educators, union members, youth, elders, elected leaders, small businesses, and more to have this vital conversation as a state. We need to be talking about what Alaska will look like in 5, 10, 20, and 100 years from now. The thing about giants is that they didn't grow overnight. They needed to be taught, supported, and mentored. They need spaces to learn, play, and roam across our great state. They need to see a future here that's big enough for them to thrive. We have a choice ahead of us. We can continue to coast on the accomplishments of the past, slowly losing momentum as the world changes around us, or we can embrace the need for change, just as we have done before, and I know we'll do the latter. In addressing the Alaska legislature, Don Young once said, "Alaska and the Alaskan spirit are on the rise." I should say it differently. Alaska and Alaska's spirit are on the rise, like Don would do. That is still accurate today. It is time for all Alaskans to revive the can-do spirit. Alaskans, please run for office, participate in the process, and vote. This legislature, and especially the new generation of leaders coming in as freshmen, is a prime example of that. I commend all of you in this room. Public service is an honorable institution, and it is also a huge sacrifice. It's a sacrifice for the public servant, and most especially their families. I encourage you to be both patient and persistent. There are future giants in this room, I'm certain, and all across this amazing state. Our best years are yet to come. Last year, thank you. I'll clap to that, yes. Last year I said the Alaska model works so well because it's built on relationships and friendships. I hope that you can look at one another in this room as a team, the same way the giants before us looked at one another. Please picture it with me if you can. A future where there is no doubt that our children and grandchildren will see salmon abundance like it was when we were their age. I see a future where Alaska families will be able to live prosperously in a state we call home. I see a future where Alaskans can grow up in Alaska, raise their children in Alaska, and watch their grandchildren grow up in Alaska. To hell with politics. This is about the future of Alaska. Let's secure our bright future together. Thank you.
That was Representative Mary Peltola's second annual address to the Alaska Legislature, live from the state capitol in Juneau. You've been listening to special coverage from Gavel, Alaska, and KTOO in Juneau. I'm Yvonne Krumrie. Thanks for joining.
I think this is really critical. I think now more than ever, I mean, we certainly are our Alaska legends, the giants of our past, really wrote the book on bipartisanship. I hear more stories from the Democratic caucus about deep friendships with Congressman Young than I even do from his own conference. And that's not to say he didn't have deep and abiding and loving relationships on both sides, but certainly it was true on the Democratic side. We all know that Senator Ted Stevens and Senator Daniel Inouye were like brothers. They really viewed themselves as brothers to one another, with their shared history in World War II and coming from the 49th and 50th states. They achieved tremendous things for Alaska and Hawaii and our nation through their friendship. I am very, very fortunate to have lived in Alaska my entire life. I'm blessed with long friendships going back decades, based on interactions here in the legislature. And when you're looking at a U.S. House, 435 total members, and the majority minority is a gap of three people, we are a very divided country. The Senate, it's even more stark. Out of 100, there's one, a one-person majority. It's in times like these where we have got to have a collective balanced approach and really forego short-term political gains, looking at our state and our policies and our nation in terms of two-year election cycles. We have to be thinking 20, 100 years out. We have to be all of this in it together, not as enemies, but as team members. Everything is a team effort in this building. I'm sure you all know that. And I like to hearken back to something that Chancey Croft, a senator, a state senator, told his son, Eric Croft, when Eric Croft was a member of this body. You need it in order to be effective. You need 59 best friends, and 59 best friends is certainly a lot easier than 434 or 534 best friends. But that is the mentality that, as policymakers and as statesmen, we have to really embrace. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Gill.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Representative, welcome. Thank you for your work on. Congratulations on your big announcement on the effort to stop a grocery monopoly in Alaska. Would you talk briefly about what's at stake and, more importantly, about how Alaskans can support the work from here?
Thank you, Senator Keel. This really was an Alaskan success. I mean, the everyday people that called in, people with vast amounts of experience in the grocery world. We had a teletown hall. There were hundreds of people that called in. Only a few people were able to, who had signed up to speak. But the kind of feedback that was the kind of insights from Alaska that were offered were really critical insights. And I think that it was really on account of the sheer volume of everyday Alaskans who took the time to call in on a weekday evening. I am so impressed with how well Alaskans keep their ear to the ground in terms of policy discussions and really understanding the nuances of different policies. You know, America, we used to break apart monopolies, and this was a healthy thing. We saw a lot of growth in different industries when those monopolies were broken apart. I think AT&T is a very good example, and the growth that came out of that from different cell providers. And we're still seeing the benefits of that breakup. This merger, so every corner of the state, whether you live off the road system or on the road system, were so articulate about what this means. Talking on the Kenai about Fred Meyer and cars being neighboring parking lots, neighboring stores, but both parking lots are always open. We had so many Alaskans saying that they do cost check, they do price check before they purchase things. That helps keep our prices much lower when there's that kind of healthy competition. You know, I talked about the different commodities that Alaskans rely on, these are make or break commodities for a lot of households. Having rock salt when it's time to put fish up, having Ziploc bags and vacuum seal bags when it's time to put your moose away, having mosquito coils and mosquito dope. You all can vouch for me on this. You know, when you can't be waiting for the next barge to come in when these seasons are very fleeting. So this, you know, I was happy to take the lead on this. So happy to have so many lawmakers here in Alaska validate that with letters of your own, insights of your own. And this really was a chorus of people from across the state, across different socioeconomic status, talking about how important it is that we not have a monopoly on our grocers. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Representative Hemshue would ask a question.
Thank you, Mr. President. Rep. Peltola, I hope you'll forgive my departure from protocol, but my question is for you, Mary. In 2023, you and your family experienced some fairly unimaginable losses. And I know we were all inspired by your strength as our hearts broke for you and with you. I want to know how you managed to get back to D.C. and work for us in light of everything that you'd lost. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hemshue. Alaskans, I think people know about grief. I think grief is a very universal thing that many of us go through. Sometimes, you know, everyone's just a little bit different, but this instant, it was very shocking. It was an accident. My mom had passed. She lived a long life and passed away very peacefully. But it's both grief. It's both a process of going through that. And you know, it was very sweet. Governor Dunleavy, both of our U.S. senators, a lot of people came to Bethel and really impressed upon me that I should not go back right away. I should not go right back to work. I should stay with my kids, and I was happy to do that. And then there was the motion to vacate the speaker's position. And it was very clear that everyone needed to be back in D.C., all hands on deck. And I was very caught off guard. You know, I think if any of you watched these long speaker episodes, what would happen is when the member from the Republican conference would vote for himself, everyone would clap. I don't know what that's about, but and then they did it on the Democratic caucus side. Our speaker Emirata had voted for the candidate on the Democratic side. Everybody clapped. She's right before me in the alphabet. So, and then when I voted, everybody clapped again. And I thought, what are we doing? Vote, you know, clapping for every single person who votes. And then I realized that it was a gesture, you know, to recognize coming back a little bit early. That was such a heartwarming gesture, and I think people really noticed it across the nation. It's not often you see gestures like that of bipartisanship, but again, this is a really universal experience, and across Alaska, people have been just incredible. And all of us work through hardships. So for the sacrifices that you're all making and the hardships that you're all going through here and all of our folks, elected leaders across the state, I just really appreciate you and all that you do and the grace that you've given me during this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peltola, for those comments. We'll go on to Representative Mina, and then I believe our last question will be from Representative Allard. Representative Mina.
Thank you. Thank you, Congresswoman Peltola, for being here and also for your words on grief. I know it means a lot for you to make that sacrifice and to talk openly about your experience for many Alaskans here. I have a different question just related to Ukraine and supporting Ukrainians that are here. I'm very appreciative of your support of Ukraine since the war began, and we've seen hundreds and hundreds of Ukrainians come here to Alaska. These Ukrainians are on temporary protected status or they're on humanitarian parolee status. About the majority of them, 80 to 90%, are on humanitarian parolee status. That is a status that expires after 2 years. So the upcoming deadline is in April. And I'm worried about many Ukrainians that we've welcomed into the state. I have a lot of refugees and other new Alaskans that are in my district. And I'm wondering, as we start to look at the, you know, potential renewal of that humanitarian parolee status, how can we best support the Ukrainians that are here, knowing that for them to be left up in the air about their status, that impacts their employment, trying to look at housing, trying to figure out, you know, the mental stress of uncertainty, even just coming here in the first place. What can we do to work together to support Ukrainians and other refugees that are here? Thank you.
Thank you. I think asking the question is a perfect first step, and raising it to the collective group is a very good first step. I am not prepared to answer that question. I apologize. I will tell you that it came up in an earlier meeting today, a question about aid to Ukraine, aid to foreign allies, and certainly we saw that not go forward after it left the U.S. Senate. I know for a fact that there's a member of the House who has a version of what the Senate passed with 1 year provisions on each of the elements, and I am very hopeful that that has traction on the House. I believe half a loaf is better than none. If it's just a 1 year reprieve, I think that's a good place to start if we can't get a larger package. And we do need to recognize our role in the country. I know that there is a reaction to being focused just on Alaska or just on America. And we know that our role in the world and on the global scene is much larger than that. We need to be making sure that we are there for our allies and partners with other countries that believe in democracy. And we have always been a nation for dreamers, for people who want something more for their family, whether they're leaving with an optimistic future in mind, or they're leaving because of terrible circumstances. Whatever the circumstances, America, we know that our role is to be welcoming to people in need. And I have to say, we aren't just there for them. Immigrants are also here for us. Every sector of our economy across the nation needs employees. If we're going to be serious about renewable resource development, the biggest hurdle, according to Chris Rose, is the workforce. We don't have the numbers of trained workforce to put in these projects and maintain these projects. We need people. We need the best and brightest from around the world. And I think that we as Americans need to recognize we have opportunities to gain here as well. So thank you for your comment, Representative Mina, and I know that we all come at this issue with a good heart and an open heart, so thank you.
Thank you. On our last question, Representative Allard.
Thank you, Mr. President. Representative Pottola, thank you for being here today. Could you tell me a little bit, or just your opinion and your stand on the Jones Act?
On the Jones Act? I support the Jones Act because I support union workers, and I know that that creates extra challenges for us, but I know that as Americans, we can face any challenge. One of the things that I grew up hearing is that the human brain is the most powerful thing on earth. So I look at challenges like this and all the other myriad challenges and know we have the capacity to solve these challenges. And as long as we have the political will, we can face economic challenges, transportation challenges, logistics challenges. Really, there is nothing that we can't accomplish when we put our mind to it. So thank you for that question, Representative Allard.
Thank you so much, Representative Pottola. Pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.